some of our participants' voices have been altered to protect their identity.
We had a chance to have conversations with young people who were, for the most part, professionals, who understand and are familiar with healthcare and healthcare systems. They're caregivers. Some of them had recent diagnoses. Some had late stage diagnoses. All of them had lived experiences with cancer. I thought it would be helpful to paint a few pictures, like a few stories, sort of in their words. One of the participants, this is what they said. I found my first lump in 2019. I had my colleagues who are nurses look at them. I was told it was all in my head. I was told it was psychosocial anxiety. I was told the main reason women show up in the ER is related to anxiety and related to a sense of impending doom.
I was told numerous times that it was like nothing to worry about because I'm really healthy, and even like writing it off with like, oh, it's menstrual cramps or it's depression, and getting a lot of like that misdiagnosis. Like, I'm like, no, it wasn't depression, it was cancer. I wish more people knew about the symptoms of colon cancer and knew to like advocate for a colonoscopy, which is probably another one of those things that's more expensive and harder to book into the system. But for people to like say like, no, this is really happening, and this isn't just a walk me out the door kind of situation. This is something that needs to get tested for.
We heard another story that went like this. I have a pretty good diagnosis story. I found my lump August 22nd. They looked at me August 23rd. When my doctor looked, he sent me for a mammogram the next day, then a biopsy on Tuesday. The hardest part was waiting for the biopsy results. I called in on the Monday when they were supposed to come in, and they said no. So they would call on Tuesday. We'll have your results on Tuesday, but we don't have a doctor to give them to you yet.
So then they called me at 9 a.m. the next morning. I was like, oh, good, you have my results. And they were like, no, the doctor will call you between 11 and 1. And then I was like, could you make it between 12 and 1? Because that's my lunch hour. They said, we'll try. And then they called at 11:40. So I found out in the middle of a session with the client, which wasn't the greatest.
Another person told us that they found out on Zoom from someone who didn't know them. We heard from someone else who said they had to take a call in the middle of teaching a class with hundreds of students, despite having said that they wouldn't be able to answer the phone. But how are you supposed to not answer that call, they said. Another one of the participants had been living with really severe headaches for what seemed like years. And every doctor that they went into said, no, you live in Calgary. No, it's migraines. Oh, you're just you're doing your graduate work. It's just, you've been in school for so long. Just take it easy, relax, rest. You're young, you're healthy. They're just migraines. This kept happening. Finally, I was talking to my sister, who's an OBGYN and lives in another province. And she said to me, can you just say to the doc that you have acute nausea upon waking? It was good luck because my sister knew the magic words. At the end of an appointment with yet another walk-in doctor, this time on a campus, so at least I looked like the other patients.
I went in, he's like, we checked your blood. It's migraines. You live in Calgary. And I was like, yes, I'm aware, but I have acute nausea upon waking. And he paused and he's like, okay, I'm going to send you for a scan. And 2 weeks later, I got the scan and was sent to the emergency at the hospital for emergency brain surgery.
So there are a few different patterns that we're hearing inside of these. The values that keep coming up from the patients are that they want to be seen and cared for. They want compassion. They want to be taken seriously, so dignity. They want the ability to decide when and how they receive information, so self-determination. And they want things to be personalized. They want GPs who are familiar with their needs and who can communicate on terms that they understand. They want to be met where they're at, to be told the diagnosis in a format, a time, and a place that works for them. They also want to be seen as more than a category, and for there to be recognition that young people can be healthy and have cancer, and not having to see multiple doctors to be diagnosed. Some of the enablers and barriers that we heard were this: the power of learning the magic words. Once you have them, you can get what you need. to question this equivalency between young and healthy. The system doesn't seem to know what to do with you because you should be healthy. There might be some parallels here between some of the older adult conversations where we're having, where if you are old, you are sick, or if you are old, you are not healthy. We also heard the power of going to places where you are not out of place. So we heard from someone else saying, if women's clinics can exist, why can't we do better across the system? Right? They talked about the power of walking into a women's clinic for the first time and feeling like there was that wraparound care. We also heard about the power of the push to go back and how important it is to have someone close to you who told you it's not normal to feel that way. And there's also a tension here that the people who could know that you're not well are not the people who could make the decision about whether or not you needed help. We heard some ideas from the participants about how might we empower the people around a patient to be an early warning system. We also heard multiple stories about providers and doctors saying, but that test is expensive. Sometimes in those direct words, sometimes in other words, or it will cost the system. And they really dug in to say, well, is that always as true as we think it is? They talked about the power of young adult nurse navigators and how they made a big difference in smoothing out the experience post-diagnosis, and how every touch point is an opportunity to build trust. The first phone call, the diagnosis conversation, the screening conversation, these set the tone and can influence the speed and trajectory of the next action steps. If it goes badly, people shut down. Finally, we're coming back to that theme of seeing the whole person, treat the whole person, see all of their needs. We heard one other story, and this was some advice to the health system. One of the participants said, we don't learn by having facts thrown at us. We learn by hearing stories. My sister, who's a doctor, talked about how the stories she heard from patients never left her. I spoke once to the neuro team at a cancer center here in Alberta. 5 years later, the doctor remembered what I said. My partner, who's also a cancer survivor, has been doing a lot of video storytelling. It's more about the experience of telling the story. It would be really cool if people who are going through school saw charts about young adults, and then there was education and storytelling. Adolescent and young adults might feel healthy. They think they're healthy, and they're not used to having symptoms. If they seem stressed when we walk into your office, that's why. Maybe hearing those stories would help you understand better.
When we see each other and we both feel cared for, that's when we wake up our human side. And so one way I've found to get doctors to listen to me is the first thing I say is, wow, this place seems crazy. Are you doing okay? And they always are like, yeah, yeah. And I find that they listen to me more. You are the ones that make a difference in a way that you don't even understand. For me, they operated and I'm alive 8 years later. I don't get sent for the test. I don't make it.